All right, team, it's time to go. Although it's only been a week and not a fortnight since the last podcast, we're podcasting again. It's podcast time again. As it's podcast time. It's the Tux Radar podcast, series 5, episode 14. I'm still Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we have some news, although admittedly not much news because we only did news a week ago. We have discoveries of the week that are actually discoveries of the week this time. Do we have a Speak Your Brain?
We do.
We've got a Speak Your Brain.
Remarkable.
The report of the... the rather nebulously defined challenge, which is to do something silly.
Find another excuse for not doing it. That's the challenge.
Well, yeah. And our open ballot, which in common with most other recent open ballots, has provided a flood. Flood is too wrong a word. A cavalcade, a cornucopia, a smorgasbord of just awesome commentary from the internet. It turns out the internet isn't rubbish after all.
Not our little corner of the internet, anyway.
Our corner, your corner of the internet, you people who posts comments, like awesome comments, is actually quite awesome. The rest of the internet is rubbish, though. Right, so that's pretty much the introduction done, which means it's time... Oh, no, hang on, there's more. You can subscribe. You can subscribe to Linux Format Magazine, which is a magazine that we make, and it's about Linux and free software and... Occasionally, we mention BSD, Solaris, things like that. But you can subscribe to that at tinyurl.com/LXFoffer1. We're also now on Google Play, the Apple
Google Play is thing. Still £13.99 for a year subscription.
Is it?
Yeah. Right. I just hope the accounting folks know what they're doing.
Right, Google
maybe,
Play.
Maybe it's a cut in salary, I don't know.
The subscription on Google Play is £13.99.
For a year. I mean, we don't get paid very much, but...
We're going to get paid even less.
We're not going to get paid after this.
Maybe that's the plan. Just to reprint the last 13 years of Linux format. Oh,
wow. We've been told it's an experiment in price elasticity. When I were a lad, you did experiments properly before rolling them out. This is like the equivalent of Khrushchev going through the fields of Iowa and seeing corn planted there and ordering all the wheat to be pulled up and replaced with corn, leading to economic and agricultural mess. However, take advantage of it because $13.99 for a year is actually, well, it's super duper cheap. Economic suicide though it may be. So
let's not mention that in public. Oh, yeah.
The news this week, Tor, is it no more secure? There's been a raft of attacks, two main ones. Well, firstly, they nobbled a guy running a company called Freedom Hosting, which allowed you to host...
They. Was it Blue Systems again?
Damn you, Blue Systems! They nobbled a guy running Freedom Hosting, which hosts Onion Touch. Basically, it's a bit like hosting a website, but on Tor. So, in principle, you can't know where it's being hosted. Evidently, in practice, you actually can, because they found the guy.
In Ireland. That enclave of liberty and personal expression.
At the same time, again, a mysterious they inserted a load of JavaScript into a load of Tor sites, which attempted to identify people visiting them. Some of them were highly illegal, some of them weren't, some of them were just webmail. Well, Tor mail type things, allowing anonymous email, that sort of thing. The particular JavaScript WhatsApp was attacking Windows, so Linux users should be safe. And it was also attacking a slightly out-of-date version of the Tor browser bundle.
But, so the Tor browser bundle, this is based around the a version of Firefox.
Yeah.
Does it mean that if you install it on any desktop, say Windows or Linux, you basically get Tor all bundled within the browser?
Yeah, in principle it works really well. You just get, it's a zip file, it comes down and there's a little script to start it.
So it's like the easiest way of getting access to Tor.
Yeah, you double click the script and it starts, it connects you to Tor network and it pops up with a web browser Firefox all sorted.
Is that different to the way that those sites have been compromised, or is it too different?
At the moment, to be honest, we don't really know. There's been no official statement on whoever it was who put the JavaScript in. There's been a lot of speculation that it's American law enforcement, either FBI or the NSA. There's obviously been a lot of analysis of the attack code. And it all comes down to an IP address in it, which is apparently owned by the NSA.
Just outside of Washington, D.C.
Yeah. I don't know. I've looked through it and I'm not convinced, to be honest. It doesn't... If the NSA wanted to do it, they could do it in a more sophisticated way. It attacked an outdated version of the Tor browser bundle. I'm sure the NSA could have found a zero day in the latest if they'd wanted to.
It could be some intern.
It
could be just their NSA summer project.
Yeah. Summer of code. NSA.
Yeah. Yeah. Summer of code. Yeah.
A summer of espionage.
Hey, he's good. Let's hire him.
Yeah. And secondly, they made no attempt to hide the IP, and there's various techniques you can do to make it difficult to find who did it.
They used Tor.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me in the least. It's a bit weird seeing that, things like the IP address is open in the JavaScript or whatever it happens to be and easily traceable. I don't know. It doesn't surprise me that there are ways into Tor.
Yeah.
Not having any kind of a, just knowing the way that these things go. You know, there's always some kind of loophole, especially if you're running some kind of insecure browser. A massive piece of application on your desktop.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, from the moment you saw the Prism scandal started to break, I assumed they had enough wiretapping going on to be able to do fingerprinting over Tor. Because the security of Tor works on the fact that each node doesn't know the whole chain. But if you can sniff every single node, every connection, then you can piece the pieces together and you know who's connected with who.
Right, you can see where the packets are travelling through.
Exactly. It's not perfect, but it's been shown to be reasonably good if you've got a large enough surveillance network.
Right.
And it's a fundamental issue with onion routing.
I always think that when things like this happen, it's like a firewall for some greater, deeper level of espionage. And they kind of, as soon as this is discovered, whoever's got the other level, they're packing up shop or they're moving to an even deeper level, you know.
Yeah.
Or waiting to see what the reaction is or how the Tor community responds. Which will be interesting to see what deeper levels of obfuscation or whatever it is that they find or build into the guarantees. Just use Telnet. I don't know. But yeah, it is interesting because, you know, Tor is just one of those foundation stones. I've never used it other than through tutorials, but it's good to know it's there.
I mean, perhaps the weirdest thing is it's basically funded by the American government. Mm. This is essentially the American government attacking one of their own projects.
That's weird.
Yeah. Sometimes. But anyway, that's Tor. If you are using Tor, it's believed to be secure if you're using it on Linux with the latest version. Although, anyone's guess now.
It's believed to be.
It was believed to be secure on Windows.
It's probably secure.
Yeah.
But then, if you're not doing anything wrong, why have you got anything to hide?
That's true. Yeah, just... Well, in fact, why bother with SSL at all TLS? It's just a waste of server resources, really, encrypting stuff.
Yeah, it is. Just think of the global warming effect of all those servers churning through all those keys. It's just so unnecessary.
Yeah. especially since they can read it on anyway. moving on. I've got an update on, a slight update on Ubuntu Edge. They've made a little bit more money than they had last week, slightly over $1 million more, which for a week really isn't that much given how much they're raising. But they have got the first major corporate backer, Bloomberg, the financial analyst news type thing. They've ponied up for one of their $80,000 phones.
Plus postage.
No, plus postage included. So I don't know, they're edging along.
Yeah,
I think that's the future for this convergence malarkey. I don't want one myself. I don't want a phone that is also a desktop computer. But if you're sending out a team of however many reporters around the world, I think it makes sense for you to be able to control their devices, because bringing your own devices, although superficially attractive because it has a low initial cost.
Low maintenance.
Yeah. keeping track of all the data must be an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, especially if you've got any sort of security issues, if your data's confidential in any manner.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a non-starter. So something like the Ubuntu Edge or Ubuntu for phones would be just absolutely great for those people.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to see what happens, and I would really do wish them all the best. And you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's looking unlikely that they're going to.
But it was always looking unlikely. I think we said that last time.
It's looking unlikelier now, or less likely, as some people like to phrase it. The final piece of news we've got is Linux has a new long-term support version, Linux the kernel, that is, using the word in its proper meaning.
That's not GNU / Linux.
No, this is just Linux. The kernel 3.10 is the latest long-term support version.
So how long is that supported for?
2 years.
Right.
And obviously some companies will take it on and support it further, a la Red Hat and Ubuntu.
I did see, actually, I was reading Engadget this morning. I just wrote it down. And the Android open source project maintainer has walked out.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't have time to read it.
Jean-Baptiste Quera has walked out. Nobody really knows why, but this is a project that mostly works on releasing open source versions of Android, built mostly around Nexus because it's easier to work with. And while they didn't say, and the Android story linked to a couple of other sources as well, it looks like Qualcomm is unwilling to provide source code to its graphics drivers in the brand new Nexus 7, the Super HD version. But how that has led to a walkout over the project, I don't know. That sounds like a stonewall. You know, constantly fighting companies like Qualcomm must be very frustrating, you know, who constantly never get it. This is an open source project. You have an obligation, or, you know, this is the way that it works. Yeah, it must be pretty demoralizing. So maybe that's what it is. But the fact that there is an Android open source project is a very, very good thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's great that Android has this foundation, and we'll always have that foundation, and we shouldn't let it slip. So, I don't know. Hopefully they can work it out. So that takes us on to discovery of the week. Chris actually can't make it. Chris, our ops head, who's been joining us, can't make it. But he sent me a couple of his discoveries. His first is actually quite good. I'd not heard of it. And it's called OS Uninstaller, which apparently is something you can install off the Ubuntu repositories, off a live CD. You install it. It scans your hard drives for operating systems, I guess, including Linux, and you're booting off a live CD, so it can do whatever it wants to the hard drive, and it removes them. Now, I guess as Linux folks, we don't have any problem using gparted or messing things around when we install a new distribution. But I think for someone like Chris, you know, we used to get quite a few emails from people asking, how do you remove Linux? And it was like, well, just pretend it's not there and install something else. But, you know, this is a logical step, and it's probably a pretty useful thing to do if you want to know Linux is removed.
That might be grand, because on one of my computers, got loads of different distros installed. And whenever I put a new one, I was like, okay, I'll wipe off, I don't know, OpenSUSE, whatever, put in this. I always have that bit where I'm going through the install and it's got the partitions, and I'm like, which one is it? Is it partition 4?
Yeah.
Or is that the one I've got all my essential data on?
And what makes it worse is that if you boot using the BIOS hard drive choosing menu, it can change the SD numbers.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
So, yeah, you have to make sure you've got exactly the right size. And if you've got partitions the same size, one holding all your valuable data and another just some random distribution, you've got to be super careful.
Yeah.
So does that work with computers that are dual boot with using Windows as well? Because that was a regular problem, isn't it? If you, say, for instance, had a Windows machine and then you install a distribution and then you wanted to get rid of that distribution, you had to go through a different process in order to make Windows work again properly because of grub.
I don't know if it will fix Windows. I don't know. There are tools for doing that, like fix MBR, but it might do. Mm. I mean, that would be quite good if it deleted Linux and restored the Windows MBR. Yeah. It's worth trying. Chris would probably know, because it sounds like he's had to do it, and he has got Windows on his dual boot on his Linux machine. His other discovery was. It looks like he's been trying. Chris is really into games, and he's obviously been trying to get Linux games working. And he said that don't install experimental drivers for your graphics card through Ubuntu, because they really are experimental. And he said he's had much more luck with AMD drivers than he has with NVIDIA, despite popular opinion being the other way around. So I don't know. The Linux gaming is still. I'm still losing track of the number of people who are making, it's Unity. Unity being ported to Linux means that everybody using Unity to develop their games can relatively easily port to Linux. And with all of this momentum that Linux currently has, it's just brilliant. So they were Chris's discoveries.
Thanks, Chris.
Shall I go next?
Sure.
I've got a trio of discoveries this week.
He feels really proud of his discovery.
I am quite
proud
of
his
discovery.
Look at his little face.
Look at his little Mohican.
That was going to be my challenge. You've ruined it all. My first discovery is that Gondor, the Middle World, the Middle Earth realm, it is a kingdom, Middle Earth kingdom. It is by the end of the book, anyway.
It's a stewardship.
It's a kingdom.
It uses the same time system as Tanzania.
Really?
Yeah. This is a time system exactly 6 hours out of sync with what we know as time, where essentially 0 o'clock is the moment where the sun rises, not where it's in the middle of the sky.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never knew that. I never knew that about Tanzania or about Gondor.
In Tanzania, well, it makes more sense in equatorial countries because the sun rises at roughly the same time year round. It only varies by sort of half an hour or so either way. So they just sort of normalise it at 6 o'clock. And it goes through the day. And they do the same in Gondor.
So how do you know they do it? I can't remember a reference to it in Lord of the Rings.
There's only a very small reference to it. And I wouldn't have probably picked up on it unless I knew that was in Tanzania. And there's just this bit where... which one of the hobbits goes to... Minus Tirith, is it Merry or Pippin?
Yeah, it's Merry or Pippin.
Merry. And he taught
us... Sorry, to
Minus Tirith.
It's Moriah Doc Took, isn't it?
I think it is.
Or is it Peregrine? It's the Took, it's the one...
No, sorry, it's Pippin.
Is it Pippin?
It's Pippin, yeah.
Okay, well, whichever one it is. He talks about the bell ringing so many hours after sunrise, and he said that's blah, 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 that's six hours out of sync with Shire time.
Cool.
That's amazing. Tolkien wins.
Yeah. So, from this, we were talking about this on the... Well, you were talking about this on the way down. Have you deduced that Gondor must be near the equator?
Well, as I said, it works in Tanzania because it's close to the equator. So maybe that is a hidden message in Lord of the Rings. Mm. I don't know.
That makes their planet pretty small, considering the length of time it takes them to walk down to Gondor.
Well, you don't know how far north to Shire is.
No, that's true. Yeah. Wow. great discovery.
Yeah.
Next time, I see the Lord of the Rings, especially the Return of the King, I'm going to be looking for the palm trees and the vegetation.
Actually, the Takariyas.
Yeah. Incidentally, Tanzania is also by a big line of mountains, obviously the edge of the Rift Valley, with a massive smoking volcano just the other side, Nyiragongo.
Wow. And even the name is similar to Gondor.
Yeah. So
all the time we thought Mordor was Wales.
May have been Tanzania.
Couldn't be, because it's east, isn't it? Couldn't be in Wales. If you look at the...
Oh, no, Mordor's Wolverhampton, isn't it?
I thought it was Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Black Country.
So my second discovery brings it slightly more back on the Linux topic.
Oh, no.
In 2009, there was a bug in OpenOffice that meant it wouldn't print on Tuesdays.
That's just mad.
Actually, to be fair, the bug wasn't technically in OpenOffice itself, but in the file command, and for some reason I couldn't work out, whenever there was a TUE, at a certain point, like near the start of the file, I think it was like 16 bytes in or something, the file command returned, I think it was an Erlang file rather than a... whatever cups prints, a text file probably, or maybe a PostScript file. When OpenOffice created the temp file, cups then ran file on it to make sure it was a printable file. File returned the wrong file type because of this TU at that point and wouldn't print.
What's the significance of the TU?
It was just the timestamp from OpenOffice, Tuesday.
TUE.
Right. So... but that doesn't mean do not print me in some other language, does it?
No, file just returns a file type, text file, PDF, etc. And for some reason, I didn't work out why, file was returning the wrong type when there was a TUE, a certain number of bytes in. So,
how long did it take them to fix the bug?
I think it took them a long time to work out what was going on. I was reading through the bug thread on Launchpad, and it was just like, it's been fixed.
Five days later.
No! Try this fix. Oh, it works. A week later. No! And it just goes all the way down to the bottom, and Tony just put this comment, oh yeah, my wife told me it doesn't print on Tuesdays. And these geeks have just completely failed to notice this.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So that's my second discovery. My third discovery is an Android app that doesn't run on my phone, and I'm so disappointed. It's called Send Me to Heaven. You install it on your phone.
What?
Oh yeah.
It's a game. You install it on your phone, you start it, and you throw your phone as high as you can, obviously catch it. And then it'll tell you how high you've thrown your phone, and it sort of ranks you in an internet league table of the world's greatest idiots, basically.
That's a great reason to fork out 800 quid for an edge.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you've got a year to see how high you can throw your phone without dropping it before you can go for one big epic and then get your edge.
Excellent discoveries.
Brilliant. Shall I go?
Go for it, Effie.
But this is not a new discovery, because this application has been going on for a while, but it's a music player called Clementine, and then version 1.1, and I've been trying to look for a music player that obviously that does similar things to iTunes but on Linux, and this seems to be like it was recommended by a friend who's already using Linux, and he said yeah, use Clementine, because it's kind of a everything is included in one single package. Say for instance, you do all your traditional music management files and so on on your computer the regular way, you put them on playlists and so on. But if you call files that don't have any metadata or have very little metadata included, say for instance the cover artwork is missing, Clementine finds them through Amazon and Last.fm and other sort of online sources. But it's all the whole management of the actual music playing. It's really, really cool. It's cross-platform, and also it's transcoded. It does exactly what VLC would do for videos, for instance. It does pretty much the same. And if at the start of the playing, you can't play the file, you tell Clementine transcode this particular file and goes and finds the appropriate format. And it doesn't, just stuff like that, it's just really good. It doesn't look very pretty, it looks very simple, but the only thing that I haven't actually done is syncing with my Android phone, because normally what I do is I just drag the files into the appropriate folder into my phone, and then I play it through my music player, which now is Google on my phone. But apparently you can actually sync everything. And you can use some cloud service as well to sort of use it with your phone. I'm not entirely sure how it works, but yeah, that's it. Clementine 1.1.
Is Clementine, is it GTK or is it?
It's Qt. Right. Well, they developed it with C++. Qt was the developing tool to do it.
It's not something to do with an old version of Amarok, is it?
I think it is.
They based it on Amarok. but apparently it's a new project.
It was like a back to basics approach, the way that Amarok used to be before it became like this wiki, enormous widget, lyrics, everything.
But this does the same. This is exactly the same. If you're playing as a file, especially a local file, you can go to the info and then you grab some sort of online source. And it gives you all the lyrics and all the artwork and so on, the biography of the artist and stuff like that, which I actually haven't seen in any other. Well, I haven't actually used Amarok, but
Amarok takes it too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just too all complex.
All the meta stuff. It just gives you far too much, and it places it too centrally as well.
Right.
When all you want to do is listen to an album.
Yeah.
And it just throws loads of just unwanted crap at you about, I don't know, trivia about David Bowie and things.
I just want to listen to the album.
Whether he came from,
you know,
Mars or not.
I want to get up to track 8, I think. That's not as good as the old stuff. Put Hunky Dory back on. Yeah. It is. Yes, I've tried that. I tried Clementine.
Have you?
It's in a round of pages ago. I didn't realise it did video transcode in there. It was just music.
No. But I haven't actually done the video. It does what VLC does. VLC plays all kinds of formats, doesn't it? Of video.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't play at the beginning, it sort of kind of corrects it or something like that. Amarok.
It just supports many different formats.
Clementine does pretty much a similar kind of job. It tries to work out which format it is, and if it doesn't play it first time, goes and tries it again. So yeah. Really good, really good stuff. That's my only discovery. Nothing to do with the Lord of the Rings this time, because Ben's discovery was just awesome.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah, Ben wins. I've kind of got a discovery. It's not very good. It is good, actually. Is it a discovery? You decide. The login screen for Linux Mint 15. I remember reading in the pre-release notes saying that it was going to be a HTML5 themed, really pretty login screen. And my discovery, such as it is that it is really, really pretty. I've been stuck on using Mint 13 Debian Edition for ages, because if it works, there's no point. I don't think there's any point upgrading, and that is also, that's what Clem, the Mint lead developer, recommends. He says, if you're happy with your Mint system, just leave it be. There's no point continually updating to the wonky warthog or the salacious snake or any of those malarkeys. But I've just tried it for the first time about a week ago, Mint 15, and it's great. It's so pretty. It's really, really good. Cinnamon works. The login screen is... It just sounds so petty and trivial saying that out now. But things like that really do make a difference. It's the tiny little details, the polish, the 1% of extra love.
It's the first thing you see as well. It's the first thing other people see. So, you know, it's like when you first meet somebody and, you know, you see their mohawk first or whatever, and you think, oh, well...
She's using Sousa. No, thank you. My other discovery was kindly sent to me by Paul Hudson last night. He says, if you're ever stuck for a discovery, which, amazing how he knew I would be stuck for a discovery, there's a fantastic German word, Kummerspeck, which translates literally as grief bacon. And it's the German word... the German word for the excess weight gained due to emotional eating.
Ah.
Kummerspeck.
Kummerspeck.
Is that grief? Is that come for eating or
grief bacon?
Yeah, eating? I think that's what. And yeah. Yeah.
When you're upset and you eat loads of bacon.
If you're a man. Yeah. If you're a woman, chocolate.
Yeah.
Is there Kummerspeer?
I'm sure there is.
Awesome.
We need Mike to tell us about that. Dachshund means badger dog.
My discovery is going back to my roots, and it's a really geeky audio discovery. I can't believe people make this kind of stuff. It's awesome. This I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's Cecilia, I think. C-E-C-I-L-I-A. And it's basically an audio editor, but if you expect Audacity, then you're going to be disappointed. It's basically a GUI front end to C-Sound, which is an audio programming language for doing DSP stuff and creating filters and modulation effects and weird, complicated noises. And Cecilia is an editor that allows you to use C-Sound scripts and GUI widgets and combine them into ways of processing your audio. So, for example, you load an audio file, you use either one of the built-in modules or you write your own in C-Sound, you load it up and it surrounds the audio file with a load of widgets, sliders and dials and things, which then have an effect on your audio file. And you can change the amount of each effect by creating, this is just like the old days, by creating paths, lines, or automation curves over the period duration of your audio file. So, for example, if you want just simple reverb, adding echo to an audio file, you can load up a reverb module, and there's a fantastic convolution reverb where you can record the sound in a space like Bath Abbey and then apply that space to your own audio files. And you can change the amount of that reverb over time by drawing a curve or creating a scattergun effect of points.
What, a graphical curve?
Yeah, so you can create a B-spline curve, you can create just static lines. Also, it's got all kinds of waveform generation tools to create other random tools. But every parameter that the convolution reverb has can be mapped to different paths, different curves. So you can create the insane effects, or you can process audio very precisely. And most of the modules are very in the creative kind of realm of granular delays and filters and modulation effects. And it's a really powerful tool. It's written in Python. It requires a pretty heavy CPU to be able to run it. It's not the most responsive user interface, but it's fantastic. I can't believe I haven't seen it before. I mean, you could just load up a drum loop, you know, load up one of the modules and start playing with the curves, and you create the most weird abstract series of noise that people like Richard Devine make a living out of. So that's my discovery.
That's fantastic.
And they are our discoveries for this week. Not bad considering it's only a week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hang on, I did discover one thing. My Mate desktop environment in Mint crashed. And I've never seen anything like that in any Linux distribution. You could still use the mouse and the cursor and open folders, and the folders were still active. I think we were having a conversation about this because it's a different application that manages the Windows.
Yeah,
But all the menus on the top and at the bottom were completely inactive. I never seen anything like it. So anyway,
that's why I upgraded to Mint 15.
You had the same problem?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I think I'm going to have to move to a newer version of Mint on my computer. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But Mint 15 only has like 6 months left of support now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Probably less.
Well, I'm still in Mint 12, yeah. And that pretty much is gone. There's not support for that.
Anyway. That praise for Mint brings us rip-roaring to the halfway reminder. Still to come, there's a Speak Your Brain, the results of our challenge, and the open ballot.
Okay, so we've got one Speak Your Brain. It's from Phelan Whiteley. He says, hi, Graham, and hi to Andrew, Effie, Ben, and the Windows Convert guy, whose name escapes me, sorry.
Hi, Phelan.
Hola.
I just thought I'd write in to thank you guys for the podcast and the very excellent mag. So excellent, I've even got a subscription, finally. Wow. I tried digital copies, but it was a bit annoying being so far behind with the Ubuntu store. That's my fault, I'm sorry.
Come on, it's also Canonical's
fault. Yeah, Canonical have got hell of a lot better the last couple of times. It's only taken like 48 hours.
Hang on, does that mean we're going to lose our only Ubuntu store sale? Just as Canonical get up to speed.
That's true. But maybe it means we don't have to give them our 30% cut. Google don't provide it in Ireland, and given... Oh, he's talking about the Google Play Store. Google don't provide it in Ireland, and given I've been really busy with work, I wanted something to read for my commute to a project 3 days a week. And you kind of put me off getting a tablet. I can't think of anything I'd use it for. Even browsing with a touchscreen is painful. I've always wanted to get a sub and finally had an excuse. Can't wait till my first edition arrives. Let's just hope it's before the end of the year. Secondly, I was off at one of my customers in Glasgow. This was my first big job out of uni, and I worked for them when I emigrated from Ireland in 2002. I ended up in a call centre for a few weeks in order to pay some rent, as I was having some trouble finding a job, the usual out-of-uni problem of no real-world experience. I used to get Linux format in Ireland, and I ran SUSE due to the DVDs, as internet wasn't fast enough back then. When I started uni in 1997, we didn't even have internet access by default. Thanks in part to LXF for excellent news and tutorials. I learned an awful lot in the years before I left Ireland and after too, where I ended up building them a Hilofax server that auto-converted faxes to PDFs and put them on a Samba share, replacing a rather awkward Adobe Distiller product they had to physically walk to. This essentially started my IT career, and I ended up working with them, then IT manager. Then I took over from him and I ended up working with the then IT manager. Then I took over from him and slowly converted them from 100% Windows to the point where one of their core businesses ran Linux. That's brilliant.
Get in.
I was back up there working on an Asterisk system only in May, which replaced a horrifically expensive Cisco system, when I found my old desk. I found on my old desk a few magazines I bought back in 2003.
Wow.
I attached a picture of myself as proof.
Wow.
There he is.
Awesome.
He says, it seems I forgot to smile in the picture.
Well, we can draw it.
So thanks again, and looking forward to my tram trips. I wonder how many other people you've kickstarted in a similar fashion. And that's it. As a little postscript, he says, funny that you read out Alan Pope's name in the last episode, as every time you read mine in a Speaky Brains, it disrupts his attention. So hi, Alan. That's it from Phelan. That's the Speaky Brains. Thanks.
Fantastic.
You've probably got 3 weeks to send us the next one because I'm going to be away. That's it. I think it's challenge report.
Oh, no.
We have a challenge.
Yeah. What was the challenge? It was to do something stupid.
It was to do something stupid.
I did something monumentally stupid. I gave my girlfriend my hair clippers.
What? Hang on. She did that?
Yes, she did this. Should we say no more and just attach a picture to the podcast?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I like it.
Looks all right.
I think it actually really suits you.
And they get an extra seat on the train. No one sits next to me anymore.
Are you flying anywhere soon? I think she's done a really good job. How long did it take?
Not that long, maybe 10, 15 minutes. It started wider, then it sort of wasn't central. So I had to trim a bit off the other side. It's still not quite central.
Did she use hair clips as well, just to keep that sort of line together?
That might have been sensible. But it was just freehand.
I've done that to my kids.
Well, I think that's a brilliant result. If we had some kind of prize, you'd win.
Great, great work, man.
I'll buy you a pint.
Cheers. I'm in the midst of doing something arguably silly, but I can't report on it. Sorry about that.
I failed on that challenge. I haven't done anything stupid. Everything's been sensible.
Something silly? No, there's plenty of silly stuff, but no one's going to be interested in hearing about the silly stuff I do.
I got in a stranger's car and it got driven off to a part of America that I didn't know. in Portland.
Oh yeah,
that was independent of the challenge. That was private. Andrew Gregory find me a challenge. And I won. And we go now from the ridiculous in the shape of our stupidity to the sublime in the shape of your comments. It's time for the open ballot, in which we asked the very obvious question: is the internet dying, or is the internet dead?
Yeah. How did we ask that?
Well, the NSA, GCHQ, Frenchalon. What's Frenchalon?
Frenchalon's. I'm really disappointed no one has brought up Frenchalon before this. It's back before Prism and all that. The sort of spying system done by America, Britain, was known as Echelon, and it was the subject of an EU report. And there's some information known, but it's still quite classified. But basically, yeah, it was their big sniffing system. And at the time, the outcry in France wasn't, why are they spying on us, but why aren't we spying better? And their defence minister or tech minister, some minister said, well, we have our own system. We're not ashamed of it. You know, we have nothing to be envious of, I think it was something like that. And the media dubbed this Frenchalon.
Excellent. So the NSA, GCHQ, Frenchalon, and their counterparts in other countries are spying on every detail of our online lives. Even the once private lands of Tor are no longer safe. The very air you breathe is a poisonous fume. Here in the UK, David Cameron wants our ISPs to start filtering our web content to protect our innocent minds. You wrote this, didn't you, Ben?
I did write this.
The internet once stood as a haven for free speech, but it increasingly seems like it's being taken over by marketing companies and governments. Our question to you this week is, has this killed the spirit of the internet? I started doing a tally, counting up the people that said it had died and people who said that it was still alive. Overwhelmingly, most people say that the internet is still alive. The yes, no binary.
Did they phone their answers in?
The yes-no element of this question is the least interesting thing. As happens so often, it's the quality of the comments that makes this question worth answering. Must, as it's fairly topical, must give first dibs to Bruce Banner, who says...
Bruce Banner...
God, that just makes me feel sad.
At the end, he's all on his own.
It's awful. That music stuck in my head.
Everyone's going to look at me funny now, but who's Bruce Banner?
Oh, no. See, this is another discovery that's just come to my mind. Ben didn't know who Maggie Philbin was last week.
Having looked her up, I still don't know who she is. But I did know her co-presenter, Julia, with her sort of curly hair.
I never really watched Tomorrow's World, if that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Is it Julia Hune, Juliette Hune, something like that. Anyway, she was the one I knew. I've completely forgotten Maggie Philbin.
Even though she promised us jetpacks. So Bruce Banner says...
He's the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. But the real Incredible Hulk before, like, Ang Lee and the other one. Edward Norton got hold of it. So Bruce Banner, not verified, so it might not be the real Bruce Banner, says, in affectionate remembrance of the internet, which died at GCHQ on the 7th of August 2013, deeply lamented by a large circle of sorrowing friends and acquaintances, RIP, NB, the body will be cremated and the ashes taken to the NSA.
Very nice.
Good work. Thanks for that. Like it a lot. Anonymous Penguin 9000, not varied. Not verified. Not yet, but we need to fight, encrypt as much as possible, educate people who use the old I'm innocent, so why should I worry arguments, show them examples of abuse from history, and whatever you, whenever you meet anyone from a political party that supports this, as in prison monitoring or that lot, ask them why the government can monitor everything that the people do, but the people can't monitor everything that goes on inside the government. That's a good question. Gavin, not verified, says, I don't think... The internet as a thing is dead. It is just somehow becoming closer to how we see our electricity, gas, roads and rail. It's no longer new and exciting, but it is necessary. The question is, what will we find next that is new and exciting? I fear it may be that we seek out solitude in places where GCHQ Kinect devices are not installed, to play offline games like Trivial Pursuit, complete with banned facts about fracking and trade unions with our forbidden
banned
friends.
Facts.
Gavin says, on a related note, can someone tell me why my post is the only one with an advert in it? That's the internet giving you adverts. Tux Radar says, was that you again, Ben?
That was me again.
Yeah. That's just from two sentences. I'm awesome at recognising stuff. Tux Radar says, it always goes in the third comment down. Feel free to abuse this knowledge if you get the chance to create the third comment on any upcoming posts. There we go, we challenge you. Spangwidges says, I think Facebook, Twitter et al. Were killing the internet by providing us with walled gardens in which to play, where we could forget about silly ideas like making stuff for ourselves. This surveillance stuff has, if anything, reinvigorated a desire to return to something more decentralised, homegrown and democratised. And whatever they try to do to lock us down, well, we have better hackers, and if more of them, we'll find a way around. And also in that vein, Dark Tuck says, Big Brother is here to stay. The most ironic is that it was not imposed. It is us that jointly, by free will, the system... Oh, hang on. It is us that joined... by free will, the system, Facebook, Google, etc., and we love it. So if we want it and we love it, we have what we deserve. The internet was already being killed by Facebook and Twitter before the government came along. Discuss.
I think this is a good point. That I think there's a, that, that's a wider privacy issue that I have a problem with, that people don't understand or seem to recognise the consequences of them puking their whole lives into Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, I mean, I don't want my great-great-grandkids to see whatever I was gossiping about with my friends. And that's something that I've always considered. And I think, you know, teenagers especially just don't think about it in those terms. I think that's a new issue. And I think that's the walled garden Twitter. That's new to them. They own that problem. The wider privacy issue of the government snooping on us and is the internet dead?
I don't think that is intentional, isn't it?
No, they're good. They're all right services. Twitter, I think, is revolutionary.
Well, what I mean is the actual action of, sort of, for instance, disclosing everything that you want to disclose on those environments, and allowing the government to, or any other agencies to find out what you're up to, kind of thing. That was accidental. No single user consciously went into these sort of services thinking, oh yeah, I'm going to put all this information for the government. So, yeah, so it's accidental. None of those actions were intentional. So I don't know. I don't think that in that case, I don't think that, for instance, that any agencies has any sort of right to snoop on those services because you've freely joined them. I'm not sure if I'm trying to explain what I mean.
So you're saying just don't join them?
Yeah, don't join.
Host your own email.
Now that the information is there, now that everything is disclosed, that anything that you put in there is going to be sort of wide open for everyone to see.
Yeah.
Then be careful. It's down to you to join them. Before, no one knew about it. No one realized that would have been the case.
That's pretty much what Spangwidges is saying. The desire to return to something more decentralized, homegrown, democratized.
It certainly made me think in those terms.
Yeah.
You know, Ben and I have both set up own cloud on our own VPSs, which may or may not be more secure, but, you know, we have more control over it.
And actually, I don't like the surveillance aspect, but the aspect of it that actually worries me more about this sort of trusting companies do, you know, the whole cloud computing, is when they just cut people off, like when Amazon just cut off someone's Kindle, Google just cut off someone's, you know, docs.
If you've got all your children, I don't know, I'm thinking in terms of family life at the moment, but I mean, if you've got all of your children's photos from when they were an early age, you know, right up to their teenagers, and then Google just closes your account, and there's no one you can phone up.
Or, you know, like us, we were working, you were a journalist, you spent a month working on a story, suddenly one day you log in and you can't get it anymore. It's gone.
I agree with you.
And there's no recourse to it. Who'd you call? You've got no right to that information. You've given it to them. That's it. That's theirs.
Yeah.
If they want to cut it off, they cut it off. And that is that sort of thing that worries me far more about.
And it happens as well.
It does happen.
That advert for Chromebooks where there's the dad taking pictures and leaving a blog of his daughter's life from birth.
Yeah.
That's just the creepiest, weirdest thing. Oh man, it's horrible. It's just ugh. Yeah.
Check it out. Yes, back to commentary. Eric the Penguin says, it all depends on how people see it as who knows how long had NSA or Prism existed. Everything is a conspiracy. Never trust anyone. Trust no one but yourself. And, of course, the awesome people at Linux Format. And use Tor. Tor, previously mentioned. P.S. P.S. We still miss you, Mike. Mike is alive and well and living in Vienna. Impossible to say the word Vienna without thinking of Midior's little pencil tash. Ben could tell he doesn't know who Midior is now.
He was the guy who did Band-Aid.
Yeah.
That's literally all I know about him.
He was also in Thin Lizzy, very briefly.
Was he?
Yeah. I didn't know this until...
I didn't know that.
Yes. He was going to learn the guitar parts on the flight, but then they booked him in on Concorde and he only had an hour and a half. Hjauj says, yes, no, sort of, maybe. The internet isn't dead. Our freedom to use it privately is, however, dying by inches. Like all good things, sooner or later, someone will cover it with red tape and charge us for the privilege. Just look at the music industry, soulless corporate shell that churns out boy bands and Justin Bieber. I hope the internet will not turn into a Simon Cowell subsidiary wannabe.
I don't know if that was meant ironically, but Justin Bieber famously got big on the internet. He was a YouTube star. So it was them that churned out.
And of course there is Justin Bieber Linux.
Of course there is.
That's that point.
And Hannah Montana.
I've circled that and written good point. Turn to the next page in notes. Oh, here we go. John Stiles. The problem is that the internet does not grow in trees and must be costed and provided in some way. When we were originally piggybacking on the military/academic system, they paid the bills. Today, it has grown beyond that simple need. It has been monetized, and big business is the powerful lobby we enable it to be. Big data has arrived, and I fear it is the sibling to Big Brother. Let's be honest, which government of any political persuasion is going to miss the opportunities of combining these two for the common good, of course? So, it used to be paid for by people who didn't really care about spying on us, the military, and now it's paid for by...
It's
companies.
Mostly paid for by advertisers now.
Yeah.
And obviously they do care about spying on us because it allows them to advertise more effectively.
Isn't this just inevitable then? If we're going to keep using the internet, if the internet's going to keep growing, if our high street shops are going to shut down and our shops and our town centres become wastelands.
It's going to become the Matrix.
It's going to become the Matrix. Yeah. It's going to become the Matrix. Debbie and Dave. As Linux users, we must do what we do best. Adapt, modify, and fork. They read emails, we encrypt. They read the encryption, we make better encryption. They take the information highway, we tunnel. One step ahead. Adapt, Mr. Anderson. Become Neo. Yeah. Agent Smith. You hear that, Mr. Anderson? I'm not going to do the voice. That is the sound of inevitability. It is the sound of your death. Goodbye, Mr. Anderson. Neo. My name is Neo. Yes. I've drawn a circle around that and written yes. Jim, wasn't it Graham who said on the Tux Radar podcast, I'd like to know when so I could make it into a ringtone, the internet is rubbish.
Maybe. The nihilist in me.
Could have been anyone. To save Jim from looking back over the archive of Tux Radar podcasts and to help him with his ringtone, would you mind saying the internet is rubbish for us just now?
Well, the internet is rubbish. It used to be really good.
Should we do it as a round?
Yeah. It was so exciting. I mean, these things are inevitable, just as Mr. Anderson said. This must be the second or third age of the internet. It's like the age of mountain pioneers. You know, all the mountains have been conquered, and it becomes now you get 40,000 people climbing Everest. It was always going to change. I mean, and I think it's frustrating when there are so many of us who remember how it was before the web, and when it just seemed incredible that you could just, you know, dial into a system and access a computer the other side of the world and spend 20 minutes downloading a JPEG from the Louvre. But those times have gone, and we do have to fight to make sure that it remains transparent. And I mean, there have been worse times when it was ruled by Internet Explorer and I couldn't log on to my bank and get my current account details. You know, it's important, I think, that we still fight for open standards and try and limit the amount of data from companies and from the government that they can watch. But yeah, I think the old internet is dead, but this is a new thing.
That's more or less what Burgess Meredith says in his awesome Burgess Meredith voice. It ain't what it used to be, Iraq. And that's neither good nor bad. It all kind of balances out. As someone who uses the internet primarily as a conduit for finding information, I'd say it's never been better.
No.
Yeah.
It's just that the level of communication, honestly, you can't live without it.
Yeah.
All my family on the other side of the world, I'm more in touch with them now than ever before. So you just can't beat it. I got it on my phone. I got it on my desktop. I got it on my... I struggle trying to do regular things because I spend a lot of time just communicating with my family, which probably is wrong as well. I don't know.
No, I think it's important.
I think it's important, but...
Do you worry that is the Facebook is the conduit for all of that interaction?
Probably in the last month, yes, I started to sort of get a little twitch in my brain regarding what I'm saying, what I'm posting, why I'm posting it. But then again, without it, it would be difficult to let my family know that I'm okay or that my family here is okay, etc., etc. You will still rely on other sources of communication that are not that efficient, you see. So that is my problem with this argument. That in my personal case, I just can't live without it. It'd be silly to remove myself from the use of the internet, at least from a communication point of view.
See, when I was living in Tanzania, I'd email and Facebook most people, but I'd write letters to my grandparents. They did have email, but they didn't really use it. I don't know. I just found that there was something about writing a letter. It's much more communicative medium that think about it, it's something special, whereas an email is just like meh, send, whatever.
You're absolutely right, but I was doing that and I was paying an enormous amount of money, for instance, on telephone calls, on international telephone calls, and then there was a service that sort of a different carrier that put the price down on those sort of services, so gradually everything just became easier and easier. I'm talking a period of 20 years here. And it just basically just email was a revolution for me. I didn't have to write letters to my mom. I could just send an email to my sister, and my sister will read the letter to my mother, and et cetera, et cetera. It was just the easier method of communication that I have in my family back in Mexico. And I just can't fault it. I just can't say that the internet is dead. Quite the opposite. Probably there's an evolution on, like what Graham's saying, it's an evolution on the system that we have to adapt to and make our own, and not allow all the sources to invade our space within the internet realm.
Maybe there's a new generation will find some balance.
Yeah.
And if if the internet or Facebook isn't the only portal for communication, that kind of disrupts what people can do with it. You know, if you are writing letters as well, it's similar. I mean, I'm not an audiophile, but you know, I just got a record player at home, and you know, I know Andrew's got one as well, and playing old records. I play new records on an old record player. The latest or tech, but the actual act of putting a record on and then kind of sitting down and listening to a piece of music, I haven't experienced like that after, you know, years of Spotify use. It's really good.
Just entirely aside, have you seen anything that you can 3D print records off MP3s?
What?
The circle is complete.
Finally.
You know, but I was listening to the latest Orteca release, which is the most mind-bending noise you're ever likely to listen to, you know, in a digital context. But on vinyl, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Vinyl for the win. It is a jolly one from Anonymous Penguin with headphones, who says, "We are owned by the big corporations. When we read articles about Peter Mandelson having lunch with David Geffen, then putting forward plans for draconian file-sharing laws," yes, and then the Patrick Mercer controversy, that was something to do with lobbying, I think. "We need to realise that politicians are not acting in our best interests. But those of the oligarchs and the big corporations, big money making laws to govern us. Cameron's crusade against the internet is just an appeal for support from the Tory heartlands, the ones you see at the party conferences in Twinset and Pearls, smelling of decay and lavender. And Tory women are no better. Think of the children. You have nothing to fear if you have nothing to hide."
I mean, I think it is important to remember that it's not just governments using this to control us, because the power of the internet, the democracy, I mean, things like WikiLeaks, I mean, the very fact that Edward Snowden could leak what, I mean, there's a sort of an ironic thing there that he couldn't have leaked it probably without the internet, or at least not in the same way.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have got around, you know, it wouldn't have created this whole thing about it. I don't know.
Well, if those WikiLeaks stuff had just been stored on paper in a filing cabinet, then the world would have been safe.
Graham Greene would have written about it.
Yeah. Just drawn out a sketch of a vacuum cleaner. But
the photocopying machine.
Yes. Must read.
And pipes.
Must go back and reread Graham Greene. Must do that. Secret Hamster. There's a couple left. We've got time because they're all awesome. Secret Hamster says, "I've always found it really hard to understand the concept of the internet, big T and big I. The whole concept of an internet, little I, is as a collection of networks. Even as I write, autocorrect on Firefox is saying I've spelt internet, little I, wrong, because it should be internet, big I." As regards Cameron's comments, it shows the whole stupidity of what they spout in the aim to grab headlines. You cannot blanket ban. Where is the line drawn? For me, the line should not be drawn at all. Do I automatically get marked for being a naughty person because I ask not to be blocked? Case in point, Scunthorpe. In the early days of the internet, it was hard to get information on this seaside town because of poor filtering software for naughty words. There's a naughty word contained in Scunthorpe. Okay, make things easier for parents or people in general to turn on filtering, but it should never be turned on as a default. For a start, kids will always find their way around it. So it's a costly, pointless exercise that will cost us all money and economically cripple our internet. Does this also concern data transiting to outside the country? If this happens, we might as well go and live in China. At least they have economic growth. And then he's written a correction. I always think of Scunthorpe as a seaside town. It's not really.
It's one of the sort of slight side points that's been brought up a few times, actually, not in our comments, but elsewhere, is that we often talk about education and the importance of technology in education. Nothing is going to increase technology in education or the ability of kids to use technology more than trying to block them from looking at stuff on the internet.
Yes, yeah, you're right. That's not a challenge. And it won't be that much of a challenge, though. That's
No.
I've already read that one about the economic incentives for the internet. And we've read Bruce Banner talking about the ashes. Oh, here we go. Spike 102 says, "Of course the internet is not dead. Sir Humphrey is simply redefining the internet in the wider national interest. And this aim is shared by governments the world over. We should not fear those who have our best interests at heart." Good work. And Torwag says, You do not have to care. If the internet dies, you sell more paper copies of Linux format and everyone is happy to get the podcast on your DVDs. If it lives, you sell more digital copies and put the podcasts online. What lucky guys you are.
We are lucky guys.
We are lucky.
Not very lucky.
Any closing thoughts about whether the internet is dying? I kind of agree with Burgess Meredith and Spangwidges. And I agree with most people, actually.
I think it's certainly true that we're getting the internet we as a population deserve.
Yeah, like we get the politicians we deserve.
Yeah. We're getting this because we've allowed it to happen, because we're handing our data over willy-nilly.
Because we don't even read the non-disclosure agreements that are twice as long as Macbeth. We just click, whatever, take my data. But it's true that we have the power. We as Linux, Unix users, we as the editors of a Linux magazine, we have the power to educate and to help us use more, use proper free stuff and help get people, help wean them off this, addiction to convenience at the price of privacy.
Yeah.
That's a great way to end it.
But it does have awesome cat pictures.
Pretty soon there's going to have a picture of your hair.
Right, that's it. It's 1 hour and 8 minutes.
Oh, wow, that's very long.
So, thanks. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 3 weeks, because we can't do one in 2 weeks. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.